holding on the top line of Tzadik Amud Aleph. We started, the Gemara started a discussion yesterday on the question, do the Rabbanan have the right to make a takana that uproots, that takes away something d'oraisa? So originally we talked about in connection with Truma, do we have a case where something is valid Truma d'oraisa, but the Rabbanan are saying that it's not? We talked about how it relates to, we talked about a possible thing from our Mishnah where we say that a child is considered a mamzer midrabbanan even though he's not d'oraisa. So far we answered that that in all those cases, no, either we say that in the case of the Truma, we still left open, that was the original case that Ruchis had said. All the other cases, which was what he was trying to bring a proof to, we said either, as in the case of our Mishnah, what it is that Chacham specifically made the Takana in a way that it only has an effect in Rabbanan, but not d'oraisa. In the case of this child, for example, we say that he's a mamzer d'rabbanan. Hello? We said that he's a mamzer d'rabbanan, meaning therefore that he's not allowed to marry a bat Yisrael, but on the other hand, not a mamzer d'oraisa, and so he can't marry a mamzeret either. So they're not changing the din d'oraisa. Right. Or we say that it's a matter of din imominus, where they have the right, where they have more latitude, hefka based in hefka. Continuing on this topic.
What was the problem with the Truma?
So we haven't figured that out yet. That was Rav Chisda's original case, where he said that the Rabbanan have the right to declare that this person who took off Truma Tzmeya on behalf of Tahara, that we don't consider it Truma at all, which effectively is overturning something d'oraisa, because midoraisa it is valid Truma, and you're saying midrabbanan that it's not, that a Zohar would be allowed to eat it. So Rav Chisda is trying to bring a proof for himself, you see, just like I can find some other case where the Rabbanan have the right to do that, so also in that case. So far we haven't found such a proof yet. The Toshma, Tzadik Amud Aleph, top line. Toshma, a Braita says, Ochol Truma Tmeya, if a Zor eats Truma Tmeya, Mishalom Chulin Tahorin, then he has to pay back the Koyin with Chulin, which are Tahor. The general rule is when a person eats Truma B'shogig, he doesn't pay back the Koyin in money, he pays back the Koyin in produce, and that produce becomes Truma. So in this case, what he ate was Tomei, what he pays is Chulin Tahorin. On the other hand, what happens, Shulim Chulin Tmeyim, what happens if he pays back with Chulin that are Tomei? So, it depends. B'shogig tashlum of tashlumin, if he did it b'shogig, meaning he didn't realize that the produce was tomei, for example, then fine, his tashlumin is a good tashlumin. We'll say that fine, these chulin tmeim that he gave are considered now truma, they'll only be truma tmeya, so the kohen can only use them for firewood, but it'll still work. The mazid ain't tashlum of tashlumin, whereas if it was the mazid, we do not consider his payment to be a payment. We cancel him, we penalize him. Whereas the chachamim say either way, the payment that he made is valid payment, it does become truma. But he is going to have to again pay chulin, which are tahor.
Meaning what, the money he paid is...
Not money, he didn't pay in money, he paid in produce. Meaning, right. So he paid using, he first paid using this bag of produce, which was Tomei. Right. The Chachamim are saying, fine, that's considered Truma. He does have to give it to the Kohen, and it becomes Truma. It becomes Truma. Yeah. But he's also going to have to give another bag of Cholin to her, which will become Truma Taya. We penalize him.
So before
we have the case where the person is actually taking Truma itself. Here he's not taking truma, here he's paying back the truma that he ate. The problem with that, for Havinan Ba, we had a discussion about that in the Gemara and Gittin discusses this. Why b'mezid ein tashlum of tashlumin? Why are we saying that we should fine him? Why are we saying that we should penalize him? On the contrary, tavoy ala bracha. On the face of it, he did a good thing. He did a very good thing. So what did he eat? He ate truma, which is tamei, which the kohen is not able to eat it when he is tamei, because nobody can eat truma when it's tamei.
No,
we're talking even if he did it b'mezid. If he took truma that belonged to a kohen, that's tamei, where then it was useless to the kohen for food. All the kohen could use it for is firewood.
Yeah.
And now he ate it. The Kamashala Midi, the Kahazulay the Metumasai. What is he paying him back with? Something which right now, when he's paying it, is something that the Kayan would be able to eat when he's tummy. Because it only becomes truma after he pays it. Right now, when he takes it out of his own produce, it's still chulin. The Kayan's allowed to eat chulin tmeim. So on the contrary, what are you telling us? You should penalize him and make him have to give truma, you make him have to give chulin to her and again. Why? He did a good thing. He took something that the kohen couldn't eat and replaced it with something that the kohen could eat. And the answer is v'omar rava v'omar rava, and rava said v'amri lo kedi, or others say kedi. Said it. The Rav Mechoshim would say that kedi is the name of an amora, but most of them say that kedi means anonymous. So we're not sure it was Rava, it was somebody else. Anyway, said, Chasuri Mechsera, the Braitha is missing words, V'ochi Katani. What the Braitha means is as follows. There's two different cases. Number one, Ochot Truma Tmeya, if he ate Truma, which is Tomei, Mishalom Kolderhu, then he can pay however he wants. He can pay with Tomei or with Tar, because either way, even if he paid either way, the point is, as we just said, the Truma that was Tomei that he ate was not worthless, but the Kohen had very little use out of it anyway. All he could use it for was fire.
Sorry, Mishalom, he ate at the Shogun?
Yeah. Which I'm colder, then he can pay however it is. However, ochal truma tahora, this is the part that's missing from the braisa. If he ate truma, which is tahor, mishalim cholim tahorim, then he has to pay back with cholim that are tahor. And in that case, shulim cholim tmeim, what happens if in that case he paid back with cholim that are tamei? That is the case, as the braisa continues, sum chosem mishum rameir, b'shoigig tashlumim tashlumim, b'mezid ein tashlumim tashlumim, that b'shoigig will consider it a good payment, even though it's tamei, and now the kohen can't eat it. Once it becomes truma, all the kohen can do is use it for firewood. Nevertheless, it was b'shoigig, so we'll accept it, whereas b'mezid not. Whereas the Chacham say, either way, we do consider the payment as a payment, that what he gave becomes truma, but in the case of Mezid, we're going to make him have to pay back again. Now, what's the point? How does this relate to our situation over here? Now, Midaraisa, what he gave, and again, in this case, he ate truma, which was tahar.
Yep.
He's paying back with cholim which are tamei.
The mezid
doesn't really matter for our purpose.
Okay.
Midaraisa, that's a perfectly valid payment, because we said yesterday, we had Rabbi Loi's statement yesterday, that midaraisa, if you give tamei as truma on behalf of tahor,
yep,
then it's valid truma. By the same token over here, midaraisa, if you're paying back for truma which is tamei with for truma which is tahor with cholam that are tamei, midaraisa, it also works.
So of course you have to give, that's no good, and you have to give another one.
That's the question. The Amar Rabbanon ate tashlum with tashlum. Now the Rabbanon seem to be saying, now not the Rabbanon, meaning when we say the Rabbanon, we mean sumchus. When sumchus is saying in the name of a mayor, the mezid ain't tashlum of tashlumin, we're assuming, what does it mean, ain't tashlum of tashlumin? We're assuming it means, like we said yesterday, according to Rav Chisda, it means that what he gave is not considered truma at all. He takes it back, it's still considered chulin, and he has to take out new chulin, which are tahor, and give that to the kohen. And what do we mean tashlumim mal yahabi? Do you mekadosh b'hu koyin isha tafsalu kedushi? The koyin, for example, could even use this to be mekadosh a woman, the truma tmeya, or there's rather these cholin turned truma, and use it to be mekadosh a woman, and it would work. The kedushin would be tofus because it is the koyin's property. But omer rabbanon ain't tashlumim tashlumim, whereas the rabbanon are saying that the payment is not a payment, meaning the koyin has to give it back to the Yisrael. The kasharon and ashes ish alma. So effectively, therefore, we're being matir, a woman who is an ashes ish, we're being matir to marry somebody else, to be discarded to somebody else.
Potentially, yeah.
Therefore, you see an example where the rabbanon are able to make a takana which overrides something daraisa.
By saying that truma that they gave is no,
they
have to give it again.
If we said you have to give it again, then it wouldn't be a problem, because it means you have to give that to the kohen. It is considered truma midaraisa. From the rabbanon, we're going to penalize you. What we're saying is, when we say ain't truma, say truma, when we're saying ain't tashlum, tashlumin, it sounds like it means the Yisrael takes back what he gave the kohen.
Yeah.
It's not considered truma at all, even though midaraisa it would have been.
Yeah.
And then he has to give different. He has to give cholin v'shatar. If you say the kohen keeps what you gave him, and then you also have to give him more, fine. Then the rabbanon are not impinging on anything daraisa.
They're
just adding. Fine, but they're allowed to do that to penalize the person. But how are they allowed to take this bushel that you gave to the kohen, which is tamei, and they're telling us midaraisa would be considered truma, it would be considered the property of the kohen, but midrabanon it's not. How is that?
So what are they doing? What are they saying with that? You gave the what do you call it?
You originally gave the Kohen chulin, which are tamei.
Which are tamei.
You ate truma, which was tahor.
Right.
You ate truma, which was tahor, and then you paid back using chulin, which are tamei.
Right.
What? The Shogeg was saying fine. Okay. The Mezid was saying it's not fine. Right. Now, what do we mean by not fine? The Pashtus, that means take it back, give him chulin, which are tahor. But in that, how can you take this back? Midoraisa, this is considered truma. Yeah. This is considered the property of the Kohen. Now, Tosfos points out, you can't say it's a matter of Hefker based in Hefker like we said yesterday, because Hefker based in Hefker would allow us to say that the Yisrael should be penalized. It wouldn't allow us to say that something which is the property of the Kohen, and the Kohen didn't do anything wrong, that we should take it away from him. So you have a situation over here where it seems that the Rabbanon are able to override something to Araita.
Take it back and give another one.
Yeah. But how can you take it back if midoraisa belongs to the Kohen?
I'll be taking it against as well. I mean,
what?
Well, the rabbi said you're taking it against, you're allowed to take it back.
No, but how can they do that? If it's considered truma deraisa, if it's considered that you paid the Kohen and it gains the status of truma deraisa, how can they say you can take it back?
Well, the Kohen will be happy to have it.
Doesn't matter if the Kohen's happy to. If I take off regular truma and give it to the Kohen, and the Kohen says, I don't want it, take it back, tough luck.
So here he's exchanging getting truma the whole as opposed in the place of man.
Doesn't matter. The Kohen doesn't have the right to say this is not truma. Yeah.
So that's a case for the rabbi. So
that seems to be a case, yeah. So that proves your Chris's point. The answer is no. Again, the answer is no. My ain tashlum of tashlum to call a mayor. No, you know what mayor means when he says that your payment is not considered a payment. It doesn't mean you take it back. It means it means that he has to, that the Kohen keeps what you gave him, and in addition, you have to give him more chulin with shatar, that I'm not going to penalize you.
And both of them are truma, right?
And both of them are truma, yeah.
Any problem when you're giving too much truma?
No, because the Rabbanan can have a right to penalize you. The question is, Yihachi Sumchus and the Rabbanan, and in that case, what's the difference between what Sumchus and the Rabbanan are saying? Sumchus is saying that the Mezid, according to what we're saying now, Sumchus is saying that the Mezid, the Kohen keeps what you gave him and you have to give him more. The Chachamim are saying the same thing, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, so what's the practical difference? The answer is, the Machlokas is, Amar Vacha, B'Rei D'Rivika, Kuntz of Shogeg, Atur Mezid, Yikub Einayu. The Machlokas between them is, do we penalize a person who does this B'Shogeg because it might be confused with Mezid? Because if you allow the Shogeg to get away with it, The Chachamim, who say that the same rule applies for Shogeg and the Mezid, they take the view, if you allow the Shogeg to get away with it and pay them, and just he's given Chulin to Meim, and that's that, what's going to happen? Everybody who's Mezid is going to claim I was a Shogeg.
Right.
So in order to avoid that, they're saying that, no, even in the case of a Shogeg, you penalize him. Whereas Reb Meir is not concerned about that. So it's not a question of is the Yisrael taking back what he gave the Kohen? Everybody agrees that the Yisrael can't take back what he gave the Kohen because the Rabbanan don't have the right to make such a takana, which would override something d'oraisa. All they have the right to do is penalize him that he gives more. The only question is, everybody agrees you apply that penalty to Mezid. Do you also apply that penalty to Shogeg? So still no proof that the Rabbanon can override something that arises. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof from the Dinim of Korbanos. Damshin Nitma, a Braita says, if the blood of a Korban became Tomei, the Zokai, and you sprinkled that on the Mizbeach, which you weren't supposed to do, the Shogeg Hurtza, B'mezid Lai Hurtza. If it was B'shogeg, then the Korban is acceptable. And if it was B'mezid, then not. We learned in Pesachim, actually, we learned a whole long sugya about it. About a year and a half ago, about the issue of are we talking, what do we mean Shogeg and Mezid respectively? Do we mean that the blood became Tomeg Shogeg versus the Mezid, but you sprinkled on the Mizbeach the Mezid? Or are we talking about that the blood itself became Tomeg, the Mezid maybe even, but the question is, did the sprinkling happen for Shogeg over Mezid? Anyway, now, midoraisa, either way, whether it was Shogeg or Mezid, the Korban would be accepted. Because we learned in Pesachim that the tzitz is midasa for such cases, that the fact that the Kohen Gadol wears the tzitz makes the b'dieved the Korban is acceptable. So, v'ha'ha'cha d'midaraisa ha'ksuriya meratza. Now, in this case, then, midaraisa, the korban would be accepted, and the person would be yotze the obligation to bring that korban. So, for example, for the chatas, that's it, the person fulfilled their obligation and now cannot bring another chatas. Titania, as we learn in a braita, alma tzitz merat. So what kind of cases does the tzitz make the korban acceptable? Al adam v'alabosav al chaylev shenitma, where if the blood or the meat or the chaylev of the korban became tamei, ben b'shogi, ben b'mezid, ben b'onis, ben b'rotzon, ben b'yachad, ben b'tzibur, whether it's a korban yachad or a korban tzibur. So in b'daraisa, then this korban would be good. V'amir rabbanon loy hurtza, then the rabbanon are penalizing him and saying that it's no good. What's going to happen then? This person was chayav a korban chatas, for example. He's going to have to bring another korban and bring another korban chatas. Midaraisa, though, he doesn't have to. So therefore, this animal on a daraisa level is chulin, which is being brought into the Beis Mikdash.
And the second one?
The second one.
First one, midaraisa, it's good.
Right. That's the question. So there you have, so Rav Chisda is still bringing, or the Gemara is bringing this on Rav Chisda's behalf, that there you have an example where the Rabbanan are able to make a takana that overrides the din daraisa. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yosef Bechanina, my life hurtza de ka'amar. You know what the braisa means when it says that the korban was not acceptable? It means lahatir basa b'achila. It means only insofar as because the blood became tomei and you sprinkled it b'mezid, then you're not allowed, the kohenim are not allowed to eat the meat of the korban. Avobaylam niskapur boy, but the owners did accomplish their kapara. So again, we're not overriding the din daraisa. The person's not going to bring kolden lazara. But as far as we're penalized in the Kohenim, they should have been able to eat this korban, and like this, we're not allowing them to.
That's only about the korbanis that you, that the Kohenim eat, obviously.
Obviously, that's what we're talking about, yeah.
It doesn't apply to Ola.
It wouldn't apply to an Ola, yeah. Well, in the case of an Ola, we would say we don't burn the chayim on the Mizbeach. But either way, still, the person has accomplished his kapara. He's brought a korban.
What did we say there that it was?
It's primarily a chatas or an asham that we're dealing with over here, because an Ola, it's not such an issue. A person can bring an Ola snadava. So if it was an Ola that became possible, the Rabbanan, big deal. We'll tell them, bring another Ola. It's not a problem. You're not bringing a Cholul Azara. Only in the case of a Chatas or an Asham is it a one-shot deal.
When we say Lo Hurtza, means
it means the Kohenim are not going to be allowed to eat it.
But it's a good, but it was a good, he was a Yotze.
But he was Yotze, right, exactly. No. That's what we're saying, yeah. Question is, soif kamasakra achilas baser. Okay, but then in that case, the chachamim are preventing the kohenim from eating the meat, which is also a mitzvah. The pasuk says that they should eat what was made, what kapara was done with it. From which we learn that the kohenim eat the meat of the korban, and that completes the owner's kapara. So in that case, in other words, the kohenim have a mitzvah essay to eat the meat, the korban. In this case, the chachamim are saying, don't do that. So there you have that, a banana overriding a din daraisa. So there's two stages in the kapara. The basic kapara is accomplished by having the blood sprinkled on the mizbeach. Once we do that, the truth is, in a way, it doesn't matter what happens to the korban after that. The owner has been yotze. The complete kapara, the completion of the kapara, is accomplished by the kohenim eating it.
So you negated that.
So you negated that. So actually, right. And actually, so Rabbi Nachanan actually has a different gusa in the Gemara over here, that he said that according to him, the Gemara's problem with it is that by preventing the kohenim from eating the meat, you have prevented the owner from getting his full kapara with the korban. So Rabba tells Rav Chisda, the difference is, in this case, the Shev Val Tasa. When are we saying all this time that the Rabbanon have no right to override something daraisa? If they're telling you, go do something, the Torah specifically says that something is aser, but we're telling you to go do something which is mutter, to go and do it. But if it's the other way around, the Torah says do something, and the Rabbanon are going to prevent you from doing it in a passive way, that's fine. The Rabbanon have the right to do that. So in this case, the Kohenim are supposed to be eating this meat. The Rabbanon have the right to tell them, don't eat it. But you're not explicitly overriding, you're not telling them to do something which the Torah says is also.
It's not like you're a dying.
Exactly. And similarly, according to Rabbi Nachmanol's thing, it's the same idea, that yes, you're preventing that part of the kapara from happening, but again, it's a Shev Val Tasa. You're not actively preventing the kapara from happening. The kapara has still happened, basically. Amalei, so Rav Chista tells Rabba, you know what? Now that you mention that, I'll tell you. Ba'oi lo isuvach, I was going to ask you a whole bunch more cases where we see that the Rabbanan override some daraisa. The case of Oral, where we say, we learned in Psachim, that we learned in Psachim, Machlokas Beshama Beshilo, about a ger, whether if a ger is this guy right before Pesach, can he bring the carbon Pesach? According to Beshilo, no. We make him actually go through sprinkling with part of Adrama water before he's allowed to bring the carbon Pesach. We said, why? We said, because we don't want that in future years he's going to think, if he becomes Tomei, that he can become Tahor right away without having to wait the 7 days. So then you have a Din D'Rabbanan, which overrides a Din D'Oraisa. We're preventing him from bringing the carbon Pesach, even though D'Oraisa he should be able to. Also, Hazah. We also learned in Pesach, in the case where a person is Tomei Mes, the seventh day of a sprinkling comes out on Shabbos, where we said, Midrabbanan, you don't allow the sprinkling to take place on Shabbos, even though that's going to force him to not bring a Korban Pesach. The Ismail, and the case of a Mila knife, which we learned in Shabbos, that if you don't have the knife or any of the other necessities for the Mila there before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to make them on Shabbos, so you're not even allowed to carry them on Shabbos. So we see, therefore, the bris is not going to happen. You can't bring the knife in your shusar avim on Shabbos. Fine, that's according to Rabbi Akiva as deraisa, because machshirim milah on derech Shabbos. But we learned in Shabbos that even we don't allow it to be brought derech gagus v'karpekus. We don't allow it to be brought in a way that would only be also derabbanan to begin with, like through roofs or backyards or whatever. So there we have an example where the rabbanan are upholding a gzera not to carry that way on Shabbos, even though it's going to prevent the milah from happening. Also, sudden with tzitzis. Also, the din about a linen sheet with tzitzis on it, where we learned back in the first parak midaraisa, you're supposed to put tzitzis on it, and you put tchelas, which is wool. So therefore, even though it's chatnez, but you're allowed to for the sake of the mitzvah. The rabbanon said not to, because you might end up wearing it, or it might be ksus lila. You might end up using it at night when there's no chiyuv of tzitzis, and then you're wearing chatnez without doing the mitzvah. So there you have an example where the rabbanon are preventing you from doing the mitzvah daraisa. The kibsei atzeres, also the case of the two lambs of the shalmei tzibur that are brought on Shavuos. What it means is on Shavuos you have uniquely among the karbanos of the year, we have what we mentioned in Ezra Mekoyim, zivchei shalmei tzibur. These two lambs are brought as a shlamim of the tzibur along with the shtei lechem. They're supposed to, like all korbanos, they have to be shechted l'shma. They have to be shechted for the sake of that particular korban. Now, in this case, suppose that they were shechted shaloi l'shma. Suppose that they were shechted just as a regular shlamim, not as shalmei tzibur. Then they would still be considered shlamim. You would bring them midaraisa. And if it's on Shabbos, you would still bring them, midaraisa. Midrabbanan you don't, because a regular korban, a korban yachid, does not take place on Shabbos. So midrabbanan, we prevent them from being brought. Which again, there we have that midrabbanan, we're preventing a mitzvah daraisa being done. The shofar v'lulav, and the case of shofar and lulav, where midaraisa, you're supposed to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalis for Shabbos, and you're supposed to take lulav when the first day Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, and midrabbanan you don't, because of the famous Gveira de Rabba. So we have all those cases where we see that Rabbanan override a din daraisa. So Rav Chista is telling Rabba, you know what, I was getting ready to ask you from all of those. So, but now that you told me that, you know what, there's a difference, that Shev Bal Tasa is not considered uprooting a Din D'Oraisa, well then I can't ask those anymore. Kolonami Shev Bal Tasa Ninu. All those things are cases of Shev Bal Tasa. None of those are cases where the Rabbanan are telling you, do something that mid D'Oraisa you should not do. No, it's the other way around. The Rabbanan are saying, mid D'Oraisa, that you are allowed to do these things, but we're telling mid Rabbanan, don't do them. And yes, even you're agreeing that the Rabbanan have the right to do that. So fine, then I can't ask you from them. A couple of interesting things in that, by the way, are there's a passage someplace that says an idea that the Rabbanan do not have the right to outlaw something that the Torah explicitly allows. If the Torah, for example, in the case of shofar, the Torah just tells us you have to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't specifically say anything about Shabbos. So the Rabbanan are allowed to override it because of Zera D'Rabba. But when you have something which the Torah explicitly tells us you're allowed to do, one example, I think the example the Taz talks about is, for example, that you're allowed to sell a nevela to a guy. then the Rabbanan do not have the right to forbid that. The Rabbanan do not have the right to say, you're not allowed to do business. Normally there's a din, you're not allowed to do business with things that are treif. But in this case, since the Torah itself specifically says you can sell it to a goy, then the Rabbanan can't override that. Not everybody agrees with the Taz on that, but that's what he says. Another interesting thing about this is, among these examples we just had as a matter of sodim v'tzitzis, the Tosfos asks the question, when you get down to it, this is a kumase. The Torah says you're not allowed to wear this garment without tzitzis. The Rabbanan are telling you, go ahead and put it on without tzitzis. How is that? So Tosfos says, Tosfos distinguishes between that we know a beged is not chayiv in tzitzis until you actually wear it. As long as a beged is sitting in your drawer, it's potter from tzitzis. Only when you put it on do you become chayiv in tzitzis. So therefore, fine. The Rabbanan are not telling you you're allowed to be over on something d'oraisa, so because you're not going to be over until it's already on you.
Then I see
he's on the tzuvah, right? Well, that's all right. He's not allowed to wear it without tzitzis.
No, he's on the tzuvah.
Well, that's another matter, right? But so, yeah. So this Tosfos actually is the Achronim discusses a very, very, very big controversial issue about this whole business. How to understand this Tosfos? What do you mean? I mean, you are standing there wrapped in the tzitzis, and we know the bracha is leisatik the tzitzis. The bracha is to actually wrap yourself in the garment with tzitzis. So how does that work? So the Shagas Aryeh talks about it, the Noda B'Yehuda, others they have a whole discussion about the pros and cons of this. Do we say, for example, I mean, what one nachkamina of it would be, what if a person is wearing a garment with tzitzis on Shabbos and one of the tzitzis breaks off? You can't fix it on Shabbos. Are you allowed to continue wearing the garment? On the one hand, I mean, you're already wearing it. According to the face value of what Tosfos is saying over here, you're not over at that point if you continue walking around with only three tzitzis on the garment, because you're already wrapped in it. You're already wearing it. But maybe not. But maybe that's not what Tosfos means. Maybe every moment that you're wearing a garment that should have tzitzis and does not, you are being over. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof. A braisa said that when the pasuk says about a navi elov tishmor, and you should listen to him, means afilo oimer lacha aver al achas mikol mitzvah shema Torah, even if a navi tells you to be over on any one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, kagoyin Eliyahu barakama, like Eliyahu tells them, like Eliyahu bringing the korban on harakama, and he lived over 100 years after the Beis Mikdash was built, when you're not allowed to bring korbanos anywhere else outside the Beis Mikdash, hakol lafisha, as long as it's a temporary matter, shmalo, you should listen to him. So there you have, now there it's a kumase. He's actually telling the people, go bring this korban and let's shecht it and offer it on harakama. So there you have an example where you can override a din d'oraisa. The answer is shiny awesome, just develop the shmoron. Okay, that's different. The Torah actually says you have to listen to the Navi. Well, one second. The ligma mine, the question is, in that case, why don't we learn from that? Why don't we say that if a Navi is allowed to override a din d'oraisa, then the chachamim are also? And the answer is migda milsa shiny. It's different when it comes to preventing the people from doing an issur. Why is Eliyahu bringing this korban on Har HaKarmel? Why is he doing this whole showdown with the Nevi Baal? Because he had many people who were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and he felt that he knew that there was this need for a public showdown to show that the Avodah Zarah is worthless and Hashem Hu Elikim. So for that purpose, you're allowed to override a din d'oraisa, but not normally. Now, you're mentioning temporary versus permanent. There is actually a machloekas aposkim whether the Rabbanan have the right to make to permanently override something d'oraisa where it's l'migda milsa, where it's to prevent people from doing an iser, or is it even when it's to prevent people from doing an iser, they can only make a temporary thing, but not a permanent takana. Depends how you understand this line of the Gemara. About a Navi overriding a din d'oraisa, right, yeah.
He says it's temporary. Does he say because in order to prevent it, or is just this,
Well, the Rambam actually spells it out. He says there that, for example, in this case with Eliyahu, he's not telling the people the din of not bringing the korban outside the Beis Mikdash is overridden forever. Temporarily, in order to show that the Baal is worthless, we're going to do this. Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, discusses the issue. What do you mean? How does the Gemara think that you can learn from that case? Isn't there? I mean, there's a big difference. You see a Navi who's viewing directly from Eivishner. It's not Elio didn't come up with this idea on his own. He himself says, "Uvidvarcha Sisi, I'm only doing it according to what you, Hashem, told me." How does the Gemara even think that we can learn from that, but the Chachamim should be able to do the same thing? Yeah. And the answer is exactly that. A Navi, we know, and the Rambam discussed that also, that a Navi does not have the right to make any changes to the Torah. A Navi Rashoi L'chadish Dover Me'ata. In fact, if a Navi announces that I learned the Nevuah a certain din, then he's considered a Navi Sheker. The fact that a Navi, like Elio, has the right to decide halachas is not based on his being a Navi, it's based on his being a Chacham. So yes, in this case, he heard from the Eivishter. But the fact of the matter is that Elio the fact that Elio has the right to override a halacha is not so much as a Navi, but rather as a Chacham. So that's why the Gemara is asking, why don't we say that all the Chachamim have that right? And the answer is it's different Migda Milsa. That's different when you're doing it like Elio did to get the people away from a Zara or another serious Aveira like that. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof that we see that the Chachamim can override something d'oraisa. The Mishnah in Gittin talks about an issue that when a man sends a get to his wife to a shliach, after he sent it, he would be able to be mevatalit. And if he's mevatalit, then the get has no effect. And if the woman ends up thinking that she's divorced, then big problems can result. So the Mishnah says, "Bitlay mevatal divrei Rebbe or Brais or whatever says that if he was mevatal to get, then it's considered batal." That's what Rebbe says. Reb Shimon Gamliel, actually, I'm missing one detail over there, which is that the din d'oraisa is that the husband has the right to be mevatal to get, but Reb Gamliel Hazaken made a takana that you're not allowed to do that. Because you're going to have big problems like that. The guy's going to send off the get to his wife, then he's going to be mevatalit in order to mess things up for her. So Reb Gamliel Hazaken made the takana. So now, a couple of generations later, they argued about the scope of that takana. So Rebbe says, nevertheless, even after that takana, if the husband is mevatel to get, it's mevatel. Because Rebbe Gamliel doesn't have the right to override the din d'oraisa. No, he's mevatel. He can set up a base din of his own. He can call together three rabbanim of his own and be mevatel in their presence. Rashi quotes over here by Rishon HaYosef based in Mamakam Achal and Mavatli, so it sounds like he needs an actual based in. But I don't know, I guess when we get to it and get in, we'll learn the details. Anyway, the Rebbe says that nevertheless, even after that Takana, he is able to Mavatli. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Ma'eni Yachaloy Lavatli V'lo Lahosev Al Tanoi. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that no, he's not able to Mavatli, nor is he allowed to add to it tonight. So for example, if he gave the get on a certain Tanai, then he's not allowed to add to that Tanai in a way that would invalidate the get. Because Imkein Makoyach Beis Din Yofa, because if you're going to allow him to Mavatli the get, then what good is the Takana of the Beis Din of Rabbi Gamliel Azot? If they said he can't be mevatalit, and you're saying he's still able to mevatalit, then you basically uprooted their whole takana. Now, v'ha'ha'cha d'midaraisa batal get. Now, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, midaraisa the get would be batal, because midaraisa the husband has the right to call together a beis din and be mevatalit. U'mishum makoyach beis din kashur and eishes his v'alma. Effectively, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, because we don't want to override Rav Gamliel Azakam Takana, we're going to allow that this woman is allowed to marry somebody else, even though midaraisa she's still married to her husband, because the get is batal. Midaraisa the get is batal. So therefore, she's still married to her first husband.
He was mevatel the get, so midaraisa the get is batal.
She's still married to him. She's still an eshes ish.
Okay.
Midrabbanan, though, we're saying now, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying we do not allow his bittul to take effect. The get is handed to her. It takes effect. Yeah. The marriage is over. She can go marry whoever she wants. She's an eshes ish. The answer is manda mekadesh. Famous answer. Manda mekadesh adaita d'rabbanan mekadesh. Because whenever a person is mekadesh, he's always mekadesh on the basis that the rabbanan will agree to what he's doing. This is why we say in harayat mekadesh libe v'tabasu kedaf Moshe v'Yisrael. Kedaf Moshe means midaraisa, and Yisrael includes the takanas of the rabbanan. Well, in this case, Rafki in it, rabbanan lekedushin. In this case, the rabbanan uprooted the kedushin. The rabbanan retroactively nullify the kedushin so that they never took effect. So therefore, that way, That way the get is able to stay in effect now, because no get is really needed. Midrabanan, we say that the kiddushin were never chal. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi, haltenach the kaddish v'kaspa. We know there's three different ways you can be mekaddish. You can be mekaddish v'kesef, v'shtar, or v'biya. So that works if the person was mekaddish to begin with money.
What point did it stop being mekaddish?
Kaddish would be a ma'ikal meima. What happens if it was mekaddish would be a? Now, what's the difference between money and biya? So Rashi brings two explanations over here. Rashi's own explanation is the difference is like this. If he was mekaddish with money, fine, we learned yesterday, hefker based in hefker, so fine that Abanon are able to be mafkiya the kedushin by declaring that the money never really belonged to him. So fine, that's no problem. But how do you do that with biya? Or Rashi quotes from his teacher is that the difference is that what the Gemara is asking is that kedusha biya are effective midaraisa, whereas kedusha kesef are only effective derabanan. So therefore, the question would be: I can understand that Rabbanon have the right to override their own takana. They said that kedusha kesef are derabanan, so therefore they'd have the right to override that. How do they have the right to override kedusha biya, which are derabanan? Now, Rashi himself, brings this explanation from his teachers in several places in Shas, and in each place he argues about it. Over here he actually calls it by a very strong term. He says it's a toast gdola. It's a big mistake to say such an explanation. He said toast gadol ubiyadam. He says because Rashi says, how could you possibly think that Kedusha Kesef only did a bottom? We know if a woman is Miskadish for Kesef, she's still considered 100% married al pitora. There's no did a bottom over here. That's exactly Rashi's point. How could you call it Dirabanan if it has the four steraisa? Now, having said that, though, the Rambam says very much like this explanation. The Rambam writes that Kedusha Kesef, that Dina Kesef, that Din Kesef is Din Torah or Pirushim, Dibre Sofrim. That the explanation that Kedusha Kesef is effective is only Dibre Sofrim. And the Mefarshim and Rambam have a field day with exactly what Rambam means by that. But one basic idea is that Rambam seems to be distinguishing between something that explicitly says in the Torah versus something that the Chachamim learn out with the Yudgil Midas Shatara Nidreshes Mehem. How do we know that Kedusha Kesef are effective only based on the Yudgil Midas? Sure, once they learn it with the Yudgil Midas, then it becomes a Din Daraisa, just like everything else. But nevertheless, in a way, it's weaker than something that's explicitly Daraisa like Bia. What? Okay, so I mean, kids who are born out of wedlock are not mamzerim or anything. Yeah. Anyway, so according to Rambam, the Gemara would mean much the same as this explanation that Rashi says that Rashi brings and rejects. That the Gemara's question is that kedusha kesef, that kedusha bia are explicitly in the Torah, as opposed to kedusha kesef, which we only learn out with the yud gimel midas. Through a hekesh, kicha, not a hekesh, a gzer shava, kicha. So therefore, how would the Rabbanan be able to override Kedusha Bia? And the answer is, Shabir Rabbanan, the Bi'ilas, the Bi'ilas Nus. In that case, we will have to say that the Rabbanan will consider his Bia to have been Bi'ilas Nus. We don't normally want to do that. But in this case, in order to prevent that you're going to have a situation where he's Mavatal to get, which is going to be effective Daraisa, but then it's going to mess up things for his ex. And we don't want that to happen based on Ramliya Wazak and Sakana. So therefore in that case, Bales Breda, we're gonna have to void the Kedushin to begin with. So the gap that it wasn't really needed after all.
It
was never considered married, yeah.
And the children were okay.
The children are okay because the children are the children's status does not depend whether their parents are married or not. At worst they're pogum maybe, but they're not actually Mamzerim or anything. So the bottom line is, we still have that even in this case, the Rabbanan are making a takana, but it does not override something daraisa. Because what they do is they prevent the kedushin from taking place to begin with. Tashma, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Shamaiti, I heard from my Rabbeim, Shabaisdin Makin Va'inshin Shalom in HaTorah, that Beisdin is allowed to give people malchus or other punishments, not based on the Torah, not based on what it says in the Torah. V'loy Lavar al Divrei Torah, they're not allowed to do it in order to, meaning to violate what the Torah says. And alas, it's Siyag la Torah, but to make offense around the Torah. For example, Umaisi Ba'adam Echad Shirocha Ba'asus B'Shabbos Mei Yivonim, it happened in the times of the Greeks that a person rode on a horse on Shabbos. This was the time when the Greeks were making all their gzeiros against Yiddishkeit. So there was people were getting careless in mitzvahs. So there was somebody who was riding a horse on Shabbos. Beviula based in the Saklu, and they brought him to based in and gave him skila, even though riding a horse is only offered to the Rabbanan. Loimipnei Shadoi Lakach, not that he really deserved skila, because all he did was an Isser to the Rabbanan. Elishah Shad Tzrich Lakach, but because the time needed it. You needed people to realize that even in such situation, you need to be careful about Hilchos Shabbos. Similarly, there was another case of a man who had relations with his wife under a fig tree, which is a pretty sophisticated thing to do, and it's out in public. And they brought him to Beis Din and gave him Malkus. Again, not that he really deserved Malkus, it's not an Isser D'Oraisa. But because the time needed it. So you see, even though D'Oraisa, this person is not supposed to get Malkus or Misa, but D'Rabbanan, you're doing it. So there you have that. We see that Rabbanan are able to override an Isser D'Oraisa, and that's a kol maaseh. That's they're actually doing something. And the answer is like before: Migdam Milsa Shiny. It's different when it's coming to make fence around things to prevent people from being over on Isserim. Just like we said before about Eliyahu Barak Hamo, same idea. That doesn't prove, as far as making a takana for all time, that they should be allowed to do that. And the Gemara finishes off with that. So we haven't brought any proof that the Rabbanan have the right to override the Torah with the Kumaseh. And indeed, most Mefarshim say that that is the maskana of the Gemara, that the Rabbanan only have the right to do either a Shev Val Taseh or a temporary thing, the Migdam Milsa. And therefore, going back to the original case over there about the Terumah Tmeah and Tahara, that would mean that we don't have another example for what Rav Chisda is saying, that you have something which Midaraisa is considered Terumah and the Rabbanan are making it no longer Terumah, and therefore the Halacha, in fact, is not like that. The Halacha is like Rav Nosson Rav Oshi's opinion. Getting back now to our Mishnah, the Mishnah had listed all the various consequences for this woman. Again, let's recap the case. The woman had, her husband was missing. One aide came and said that her husband is dead, and based in on that basis, allowed her to remarry, and she does. And later on, her husband turns up. So we said now there's all kinds of consequences to her. But we learned yesterday that the idea is, and the Gemara is going to say later, that the idea is that Isha Daiko Mitzvah, a woman is supposed to be cautious, she's supposed to do her own research before she goes ahead and gets married. She didn't, so now there's consequences. Now the Mishnah had said, V'loizev is emetamin law, that neither, if either one of her husband, if either the first husband or the second one was a Kohen, neither of them is able to be metame for her as their wife. Menolon, how do we know that? Because the pasuk says, when is a kohen allowed to become tameh to his wife? Ki im she'erei akarav elav, only for his relative who is close to him. V'omamar she'erei zu ishto, and we said before that the word she'erei means his wife. So from that we see that a kohen can be tameh for his wife when she dies. But the pasuk continues, lo yitama baal ba'amav lahichaloi, that a husband among his people should not become tameh lahichaloi, to make him profane. From which we darshan, yesh baal shemitamev, yesh baal she'en mitamev. So there is a kind of husband who can be mitamev, and there is a kind who can't.
You can't
your husband, right? Okay, so what does it mean? Mitamev hu l'ishtek she'era, a kohen can only be mitamev for his wife if she's kosher to him, if she's allowed to be married to him. V'en mitamev l'ishtek psuli, cannot be mitamev for a woman who is possible to him. So in this case, her first husband then, she's now possible to him because effectively she was mizana while being married to him, and we learned before that a woman who was mizana is also to her husband a kohen. Actually, even if she was raped, she's also to her husband a kohen, but anyway. The second one, she was bechlal not married to at all because she was still legally married to her first husband. Therefore, we apply this rule, lo yitama baal ba'am of laichalai, and therefore neither of them can be mitami for her.
The first one is
he is. But the fact is, she's possible to him now. What, he's going to have to divorce her because he's not allowed to be married to an Isha Zayna, a Halala. And in this case, she's considered a Zayna. Then we said, that neither of them is allowed to keep anything she finds. Why? Time am I, Amar Rabbanan Metziyas Isha Labayla, because why Bechlal, the Chachamim makes the Takana that anything a woman finds belongs to her husband? Tiechid, Le'tavela Eva. in order that there shouldn't be Eva, so there shouldn't be ill, so there shouldn't be bad feelings between them. Like this, the husband may, you know, the husband may feel, you know, I'm supporting my wife, I'm working myself to, you know, to all hours for her, and then she finds something and she gets to keep it for herself. So you, that would be a matter of Eva. Haha, in this case, to heaven lay Eva Eva, let there be all the Eva you want. She's not allowed to be married to either of them. Then we say to Rumaisia Gare that neither of them is entitled to anything she makes. Usually a woman does work around the house. Spinning is a common thing, for example, and they're entitled to the value of that. Why? Time of my Amir Rabbanan Maisia Gare Labaila. Usually, why do the Rabbanan say that the woman gets that the woman gives the Maisia Gare to her husband? Mishum Dukha Achla Bazani, because she's entitled to support from him. In return for the fact that he supports her, she gives him Maisia Gare. Hacha, given to Mizoni Lesla, in this case she gets no Mizonis, therefore Maisia Dare Labdi Day, so therefore the Maisia Dare don't go to him either.
But it's in Mizonis.
No, so that's the thing. We learned in the Mishnah that neither of them owes her Mizonis, and not only that, because she's not supposed to be married to either of them, and not only that, even in the case we said where he went overseas and she borrowed money, she's not entitled to reimbursement. So therefore no Mizonis, therefore no Maisia Dare. The point of this is, by the way, the point of mentioning these things is, we understand the Mishnah had mentioned that we penalize her in various ways because Isha Daiko Mintzavah, she should have been more cautious before she jumps into another marriage. The question is, why are we penalizing her husband? Her husband normally should be entitled to things she finds and should normally be entitled to Maisia Deha. Why are we penalizing him? The answer is, it's not really a penalty to him. It's a matter of course. Either we don't mind if there's Eva between them, so therefore we're going to take away from him her Mitzias. And as far as Maisi Adair, since he's not supporting her, then it's not fair that he should get her Maisi Adair. She's going to have to pay him back herself. Then we said V'loi Meifer Nidareha. Yeah. We said V'loi Meifer Nidareha. Actually, there's a machlokas tanoyim about that concept anyway, that if the woman borrows money while her husband is out of town, the Mishnah in Ksubas mentions the opinion, I think, of Admon or Nochem Amodi, I forget, that hiniach ma'osav al keren atzvi, like, you know, the person, you know, he made a bad investment, basically. Like, you know, what makes him think he's ever going to get anything back? The person that lent her the money, right. But even if we say that not, even if we say she has to pay back, okay, she has to pay back. She's not entitled to reimbursement from her husband. Anyway. Then we said that neither her first husband nor the second person can cancel her nedarim. Why? Time am I Amar Achmana Baal Mefer? Because why did the Torah B'chalal give a husband the right to cancel his wife's nedarim? In order that she shouldn't be unattractive to him. Because what are the kinds of nedarim that a husband can be Mefer? The nidri inui nefesh. Where she says, for example, I make a neder, I'm not going to wear makeup, for example, or I'm not going to bathe or whatever. So then, in order that she's not unattractive to him, he has the right to cancel that within that day. Haha, a tiskana of a tiskana. Over here, we don't care. Let her be unattractive. Again, she doesn't belong with either of them.
What's the reason she's making that net? If she wants to like
somebody. Could be any number of reasons, but whatever. Could be any number of reasons, but whatever it is. Yeah. And then we said that if she was a Bas Yisrael, then now she's possible from ever marrying a Kohen, because she's considered a Zayna. And we said there, and we said that she's possible to eat Truma. Question is, Pshita, of course she's possible to eat Truma. She's a Zayna. The answer is, Vachleivim in Amaisu, it's Ruchalei. Yes, that's true. The Mishnah didn't really need to mention anything about being possible in a Kohen and from Truma. The reason why the Mishnah mentioned it is to, as a parallel with that, if she's a Bas Levi, she's possible for Meiser. Question is, Bas Levi not Meiser Mifsel Biznus? Why? Does a Bas Levi become possible from eating Meiser because of his nus? Even if it was outright his nus, she shouldn't be also. Vatanya, Levia Shinishbase, if a Levia was taken captive, where if it was a Bas Kayan, she would be also to her husband because we're concerned that her captor may have raped her. If it's a Bas Levi, not a problem. Or she had relations, any kind of relations of Be'ilas Nus. Rashi says, for example, a Goy or an Eved. You can still give her Maiser and she can eat it. So in our case over here, this was a Bas Levi. She went and remarried thinking that her husband is dead, and it turns out he's alive. Why is she possible for Maiser? Amar Rav Sheshes, Knasa. Yes, Rav Shesha says, you're right, normally she should be allowed to eat Meiser, but in this case, we penalize her and we don't allow her to. It's yet another one of the penalties that the Mishnah is listing. There's different Mepharshim that talk about what exactly is the Knas. Is it that we don't give her Meiser, but she's allowed to eat it, because even if we learned according to the Chachamim, a Zor is allowed to eat Meiser, or is it that even we make a special Knas that normally she would be able to eat Meiser, but in this case, we're not going to allow her even to eat it. Then we said Bas Koyim min Truma, that if she's a Bas Koyim, she becomes possible from Truma, meaning Afilu b'Truma d'Rabbanan, even Truma d'Rabbanan, she's now also eat. And we said the heirs of neither one of these husbands will yashin huksuba. The question is, what ksuba? Ksuba maya binta. What ksuba? We said she doesn't get a ksuba from either one of them. So what is there for her, for either heir to yashin? Amar papa ksubas bnin dichrin. True, but we're not talking about the regular ksuba. What we're talking about is like this. There's a special stipulation of the ksuba that goes like this. We know that besides, we've talked about before, besides the 100 or 200 zuz, which are the basic ksuba, there's also a woman usually brings into a marriage a nadan, a dowry. Now, a person might hesitate to give his daughter a large dowry like that, a large nadan, because what's going to happen if she dies before her husband? It's going to go to his heirs. It's going to go out of your family. Not Nichset Sein Barzal. Well, it's sort of Nichset Sein Barzal, but it's not exactly Nichset Sein Barzal, but it's similar. Yeah, but it's written in as a nadan. So therefore, the Chachamim made a takana like this: when a woman gets married, one of the tnai ksuba is that whatever she brings into the marriage as a nadan, as a dowry, the deal is any children, any boys that she has with her husband are going to be, they're going to be the exclusive heirs of that nadin. And then the rest of the estate will be divided equally among all the kids. So in other words, if you had a man was married, so let's say for example, right, so you had a man was married to a man was married to one woman, Sarah. She died before him. Later on, therefore she doesn't get her ksuba paid, right? Later on, he marries Rivka, and he has children from both. When Reuven dies, what we say is we're going to take the nadin that Sarah originally brought in. That's going to be the exclusive inheritance of her children from Reuven. The rest of the estate will be divided equally by Reuven and Shib by Sarah and Rivka's children, by all of Reuven's children. This is called ksubas benin dichrin, the ksuba of the male children. So in this case, we say obviously she doesn't get the ksuba, meaning the 100 or 200 zuz. What we're saying is even this nadin, which normally her children would inherit, in this case they don't. The question is pshita. Obviously they don't inherit it. It's one of the tnoi ksuba, and we just said before that if there's no ksuba, there's no tnoi ksuba. The answer is ma'ud etemel didad abdi sura kansura rabbanon. You might have thought that she herself didn't. So therefore, we would say that the rabbanon penalized her. Lazaro loy kansura rabbanon. You might think that the rabbanon did not penalize her children. Kamash balan that the penalty extends even to the next generation. So therefore, no ksuvas benin dichrin. Then we said achim shal rishon achim shal zev achim shal zev chotzen v'leg miyamin. We said that. If there's no children from the marriage, then the brothers of the first husband and the brothers of the second husband have to do chalitza. They cannot do yibum. Why? The brother of the first husband has to do chalitza on a daraisa level because she was his brother's wife. He's not allowed to do yibum midrabanan because this is yet another one of the penalties for her not having been careful. And Achim Shosheni Chalitz Midrabanan, the second husband's brother has to do Chalitz Midrabanan, because, like we said a couple of days ago, we don't want people to think that it's possible for a Yuvama to go out without Chalitza. People are not going to realize that she wasn't legally married to the second husband. But nevertheless, we're talking about over here that she was, again, she was married to the second one. So she thought she's married to the second one, then her first husband showed up. Her second husband died. We're saying her second husband's brother needs to do chalitza. the Drabbanan, because we don't want people to think that she goes out without chalitza. No, because people are going to think that her first husband divorced her, that she legally married the second one, and now she's going out without chalitza. His brother does not do yibum with her, either daraisa or drabbanan, because there's no yibum to be done. She was never married to him. So therefore, there's no yibum to talk about. Theoretically, she could marry, theoretically, according to many mafarshim, she could marry her second husband's brother, because so what? She's not also to him. As long as he's not a kayan, there's no reason for her to be also to him. She was never legally married to his brother. On the other hand, according to the Rambam, what the Gemara means here is the Chachamim made a specific takana in this case that we will not allow her to marry her second husband's brother as yet another knas. Well, we'll stop here, I think, because then the next discussion is going to take a little while.